It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot. He might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility. You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Try again.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to The Life Without Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Happy 4th of July to everybody as we're going to get you up to date with everything that's going on in the Red Sox. Red Sox very quietly have gotten some distance between them, the New York Yankees, and the AL East. That's what happens when you win and they lose. Red Sox swept the Blue Jays north of the border, including an explosive 15-1 win on Sunday, where Mookie Betts cemented his spot in the All-Star game with 8 RBIs, 2 home runs, 3 runs scored. You know, Mookie's batting average perhaps has not been where a lot of people expected it to be so far this year, including himself. But Mookie Betts has continued to show on a night-in, night-out basis that he is, in fact, a baseball playmaker, making things happen on a night-in, night-out basis with the glove, with his legs, and with the bat as well. Here's Mookie talking about hitting leadoff and his big day up in Toronto.
You know, when you get to the plate, and, you know, you're just expecting a good pitch to hit and you know, you're ready for it. I mean, I think today I was just more ready than other days. Guys thrive or do whatever, do well in certain situations due to where they are in the order. And I think in order to continue to put those guys in those situations, you leave them where they are.
The other Red Sox All-Stars, Craig Kimbrell, of course, is having one of the great seasons we've seen from a relief pitcher through the halfway point of the season. And Chris Sale, who's been flat-out dominant for the Red Sox. Xander Bogaerts hoping to get some votes to get into the All-Star game as he is in the final vote contest with 4 other individuals. And in terms of, you know, the Red Sox pitching, this has really been, you know, as we've watched the Red Sox here for the last little bit, this is where the Red Sox are going to be great this year, is because of that pitching staff. And Drew Pomeranz picked up his 8th win against the Blue Jays in that contest on Sunday, so he's on pace now for 15-16 wins on the season.
Just going out there and trying to throw strikes. I didn't strike out as many people today, which is fine. Just trying to stay after guys. You know, I got in a lot of deep counts still, but I was still, instead of going for the strikeout, I was just looking for them to get the ball and play and put it on the ground somewhere. You know, I feel like I was kind of working both sides of the plate, making pitches when I need to. I got in a lot of deep counts, but I made some big pitches and got some good couple double play balls.
So the Red Sox now with by far their biggest lead of the season, 3 games over the New York Yankees, and you could kind of see this coming, the Red Sox putting this together, you know, 3 out of 4 from a good Minnesota Twins team, and you could see the trajectory for Boston, where this has a chance to be a really good month, and they set out on this road trip after a nice victory over the Twins, David Price, a good pitching performance, Red Sox able to put everything together in winning the series against the Twins prior, and I talked with Christian Vasquez about going on the road trip and the Red Sox starting to create some distance between them and the Yankees.
What type of sense do you get for how the pitching staff is coming together as a whole here over the last couple of weeks, and with the starters coming together and obviously the back end of the bullpen being lights out?
Yeah, they're pitching good, man. This game is adjust every day and every week, and you know they're making adjustments, so that's why they're getting success.
David Price was saying that he hasn't been pleased with the way he's pitched since he's come back. What have you seen from him so far?
He's pitching great, man. He's pitching great. Today was, I think, the best day I've ever seen this year. So it's, you know, his curveball, cutter, everything was doing good.
How about the velocity as well? He hit 96 once during the game. Seems like he's consistently at 94. Seems like the velocity, location, just a couple of pitches that are frustrating him.
Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, that's why they training the off season to get, you know, those velocity, and you know everybody knows that he pitch hard, and you know his fastball is there every time, and you know, but yeah, he's mixing a lot and a little bit more, like I said, yeah.
This was kind of like the picture-perfect game for you guys tonight. Great defensive plays, a good start. We get 7 innings, then the back end of the bullpen with Kelly and Kimbrell. What they've been able to establish in the 8th and 9th being lights out, how does that help this staff as a whole?
Yeah, I think we have the greatest 8 and 9 in baseball right now. So, you know, it's hard to hit 102, 103. So, and, you know, I saw Kimbrough through 102 today. So, you know, it's fun to catch them, and you know, it's happy. I'm happy with, I'm the same team with them.
Final thing on the road trip, how important for this team to kind of get one of those big months together where you go 20 out of 30 and start to create some distance? Obviously, you guys are capable of doing that. How important is it to finish this, the first half strong and get on that roll?
Yeah, of course, you know, that's the goal, man, and you know, expand the first position and celebrate in September, you know, and celebrate like we won and get ready for the postseason.
Certainly, Craig Kimbrell's been a huge part of the Red Sox bullpen, but the emergence of Joe Kelly as being just a shade off of where Kimbrell is in terms of performance has allowed for the Red Sox bullpen, as Vasquez mentioned, to have perhaps the best 8 and 9 relievers pitching the 8th and 9th innings in baseball. And I talked with Joe Kelly about that.
Christian was just saying that you and Kimbrough are the best 8 and 9 in baseball. How important is it to have that distinction? And do you think you guys are there yet, particularly with the numbers you put up?
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, great relievers out there, great 8 and 9 combinations. You know, we just haven't been throwing the ball well right now. And, you know, we're trying to go out there, you know, with, you know, extreme amount of focus and, you know, a lot of, you know, conviction on every single one of our pitches and, you know, just trying to obviously get as many outs as we can, you know, without letting them scoring. And, you know, right now, our catchers are doing a great job, you know, with scouting hitters and, you know, throwing down great signs. And so it's something that, I mean, Craig's awesome, obviously. He's, you know, one of the best in the league. So just trying to go out there and, you know, keep it in safe situation for him and, you know, let him go out there and dominate.
Focus, you know, particularly in a game like this, you had some long at-bats there in the 8th inning. You refused to give in time and time again. You kept putting strikes over the plate over and over again and in consistency and command. Is that a change for you? Has your command been better this year? Is that the biggest key to how you're pitching?
Yeah, it's been a little better. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, trying to go out there and, you know, attack the hitter and being confident with your stuff in the zone. You know, not trying to pitch around anyone. I mean, especially in those late game situations, any free pass usually comes back to haunt you, and you'd rather have the hitter, you know, earn the way on than you give him a free pass. So rather than that, you know, just trying to pound the zone with, you know, 3 pitches for, you know, for strikes and go from there.
Do you see the identity of this team, you know, being focused more on the pitching staff as of late? Has that been established with what you've been able to do the 8 and 9 and obviously getting a good start each and every time out?
You know, we're playing good baseball right now. Starters are doing great. You know, bullpen, we're just going out there, you know, when our names are called, trying to do our jobs and, you know, playing great defense. Hitting is, you know, we're doing well. We're doing just about as, you know, good at, you know, everything throughout the, you know, lineup is in defense and pitching as much as we can. And, you know, hopefully, you know, with this game tonight, we'll go on the road and, you know, tough road trip, long road trip, but go out there with a ton of focus and see if we could rattle off consecutive wins in a row.
Final thing, there's, you know, always an audible gasp whenever you hit 100 here at Fenway and on the road as well. Do you notice that on the hill when you hit that number and there's like this something that comes over the crowd, like there's a gasp at what you've done?
Yeah, you could hear it. You know, the fans get a little bit more excited, but, you know, it's not something that obviously I try to do every pitch, but you know, when you hear the ooze in the crowd, you know that, you know, you threw the ball, you know, over 100, because I don't ooh for 99 or 98. So, but yeah, you can definitely hear it.
All right, Joe Kelly, right there. Red Sox have gotten much better than expected from Mitch Moreland as well. Moreland, 41 RBIs, 12 home runs on the season for the Boston Red Sox. A little bit of a slump as of late, but it's been pretty clear that he likes to hit at Fenway Park and has become a real natural fit as a part of this Red Sox lineup.
How comfortable have you been hitting here at Fenway Park? There was, you know, a lot made when you were acquired about how your swing was kind of tailor-made for the monster. Has it been as comfortable as you expected?
Yeah, some days. I mean, that's kind of the way it goes, you know. You just try to go up there and and keep it simple and put the barrel on it. And, you know, with me trying to use the whole field, and it seems like that sticking with that game plan, something that I've always tried to do, it works well most of the time here. So, you know, that's what I've tried to do most of the season.
Yeah, it seemed like early on, obviously you used the wall for the doubles, and if it's there, you take it. But it seems like there hasn't really been a huge change, as you were mentioning. A lot of your home run balls have obviously gone to right field, and if it's there, you're going to obviously, square it up.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. You know, I don't look to hit a pitch one way or the other. You know, I'm not just trying to force it to the opposite field. If it if it's there, that's where I try to hit it. If I pull it, then I pull it. You know, the only thing I'm trying to do is go up there and put a good swing on a good pitch. And if I can do that, then I feel like I'll put myself in a good spot most of the time.
How much have you enjoyed playing in Boston? You know, it's been said it's not for everybody. The pressure, the intensity is obviously different than in other places. You've had a half a year now to really, you know, kind of take it in. Have you enjoyed and kind of thrived in this type of environment? Because it seems like you have.
Yeah, I have. You know, I'm a pretty simple guy as it is. So I don't know. Maybe there's not a whole lot to talk about with me. You know, I've just tried to go out there and keep my head down and keep doing my work and do everything I can to help the team win. And you know, that's the way I've always approached it, and it's been no different here. And you know, so far I've loved it. I've loved every minute of it. Obviously, the fans are awesome. You know, getting to play in this environment every night, you know, it makes it fun. So, you know, you want to go out there and try to do your best and give it your all every night just for that reason.
The final thing on the pitching staff, you know, there's obviously a huge focus on that going into the season. It seems that, you know, really that the staff as in its entirety has lived up to its billing, with Kimbrel having a phenomenal year at the back end. Joe Kelly has been great solidifying things. Has the rotation even been, you know, better than you anticipated going into the year?
Yeah, everybody has been done a great job so far, you know. But I mean, I think everybody still feels like we could be even better than what we are. So you know, that's the beauty of it. You've got a bunch of guys that strive to be the best, and you know, they're going to go out and continue to compete and continue to get better throughout the year. And you know, we'll see where that takes us when October and November gets here.
Yeah, you've been in or flirting with first place for a long time now, and it seems that, you know, in the clubhouse there's still that feeling that this team has not performed to its own expectations out of it, which is obviously, you know, good. The best baseball is in front of you guys.
Absolutely. I mean, we absolutely know what we're capable of, and what's you know, what we can do if we get on one of those rolls and get to playing good. I mean, we played pretty good ball all year. You know, we've had a couple bumps in the road, had some injuries and some adversity to fight through, but for the most part, we've found a way to come out above it and kind of beat those situations. So we're going to continue to do that and try to build on it.
Sweet. Thanks, Don.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Mitch Moreland right there. Also caught up with a couple of Red Sox legends, including the Hall of Famer Dennis Eckersley, who's done such a fabulous job on the television broadcast over the last couple of years. And I'm interested in his take on what he has seen from Craig Kimbrel and how Kimbrel's season, you know, and his career as a whole lines up with the other great closers of all time. His answers were pretty interesting.
Kind of interested in your view on what Craig Kimbrel has been able to do so far this season. I mean, you're 90 and 92 years. Anything Mariano Rivera did, you coached you here in 2013, and kind of the standards of what you see from relievers. Is he getting into that type of range?
He's been there.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at his career. I mean, he's in another planet, don't you think? I mean, the strikeouts are ridiculous. And then this year, last year, something was wrong. I mean, his control wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he felt all that great. He had knee problems. Mm-hmm. But last year, he still was good, but this year he's just been, his command is through the roof. You know, throwing the ball that hard and just overpowering everybody, you know. It's incredible. I mean, two strikeouts in an inning, that's like Little League stuff, you know.
So he's right where you guys were.
I never was there.
Right, no, but in terms of dominance. I mean, you didn't have, the fastball.
Yeah.
But
there's more contact made off of me. But that's what I'm impressed with is his command. Because, you know, you throw that hard, you're bound to walk some guys.
Right.
You see what Jansen's doing over there, too. He's punching guys out, not walking anybody. But, you know, the whole situation with him here is they want to lengthen him out a little bit. I don't know if that's such a good idea, you know.
What's the mentality of the closer as compared to, you know, the starter? And you had to do it with obviously both at kind of an elite level. What's the difference between the mentality of the closer versus the starter?
You know, you got to be aggressive.
Yeah.
You do. I mean, obviously, you're not going to save anything.
Right.
And it's easy to be aggressive when you're throwing 98.
Right.
And you got a hook that no one can hit, you know. And
so how did you convince yourself to be aggressive, even if you didn't have as much confidence in your stuff as obviously Kimbrel has?
Well, I had no problem for one inning in my confidence. It's trying to get guys out three times.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you don't just come out in the first inning throwing as hard as you can. You try to ease into it, try to mix it up and all that. So when they did put me in the bullpen, I was like, you know, I could be the aggressive guy that I wanted to be, you know, because you can get – your fastball's better when you go one inning.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. But it wasn't 98, that's for sure.
How much have you enjoyed doing the broadcast side of things? Because to me, like, you're the best analyst in baseball because of how much you and appreciate the game, and you add some humor in, and it seems like it's a natural fit to you. Did you always see yourself kind of in this type of a mold?
I don't know. It's weird. You know, I just try to be myself, ultimately. You know, you can't be Johnny Broadcaster.
Right.
Because you're not.
Right.
You know, I just played the game a long time, and I just sort of – whatever I see, I try to express. And I get, you know, I bring passion to it, you know. And sometimes it gets maybe over the top, but, you know, it's who I am.
Right, and it seems like there's, you know, I talked with, Ken Harrelson about this last year. And there's so many, you know, cookie-cutter type broadcasters. You mentioned, like, Johnny Broadcaster. Like, everybody, you know, they cite the stats. They say the same things over and over again. They speak in cliches and baseball tones. And, you know, I think that flavor is really, you know, we've talked a lot about baseball, and baseball's kind of, you know, lost that the characters in the game.
Yeah.
You played with Ricky Henderson, and people like to watch him because he did crazy stuff. And you were kind of the same way, and you brought that to the broadcast booth, where it seems like baseball, in a lot of ways, has become kind of bland.
I know. It's sort of like sterile or something.
Right.
You know, I just try to be, you know, do a game like we're sitting down watching a game and saying, how about that? What about this? You know what I mean? That sort of thing. Instead of being, you know, and you could get into this stat Masterson stuff. I mean, this, you know, analytics and all that. And that's, you know, and that has a big part of this game. I get it, you know, with launch and all that and spin rate and one thing after another. And I can understand, you know, I can appreciate that too. But for me doing the games, I just sort of let it go. Just, you know, it's like we're sitting around watching the game.
Right. Final thing, you know, it's been fun to kind of analyze, you know, different generations of baseball and who would fit in where and kind of the greatest of all time. But is, given the fact of how much the game has changed, even, you know, since you last played 98,
yeah.
I mean, it's 20 years, but the game has changed so dramatically, the shifts with the stats and everything,
right,
with what guys do.
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible to, you know, to try to judge what era is better than the other, or do you have to kind of put everybody in this era or in the previous era in order to, you know, judge who's the greatest closer of all time?
Right. You know, that's hard. You said closer right at the end. Because, you know, you got Goose out there that went, you know, and
Raleigh.
Fingers and Raleigh. You know, they look at it like, these guys going one inning. Every time I see Raleigh, he says, oh, I came in with the bases loaded. What, every time?
Right.
Yeah, the bases loaded in the sixth inning.
And he walked up the hill. He walked up the hill of school both ways.
Me. Yeah. But no, but I've accepted it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a geezer too, man. But I've accepted what's taking place. And it's, and why didn't they do this earlier?
Right.
You know, as far as the shift's concerned, and as far as the pitching, I thought it got specialized there for a while when I was doing it. It's gotten worse.
Right.
There's a lot of me's. Like, the whole bullpen is made up of a bunch of guys going one inning.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. And you got to accept it. And I have, you know.
All right, Dennis Eckersley right there. Also caught up with Rocket Roger Clemens. And it seems like Clemens is on the path towards Cooperstown. His numbers continue to get closer and closer. And as, you know, individuals who are suspected of potential steroid usage, and Bud Selig, who was the commissioner who oversaw the steroid era, get into Cooperstown, I think that, you know, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are going to see their day of enshrinement in the Hall of Fame pretty soon. Roger was at Fenway Park. And one thing is undeniable. Roger Clemens is one of the greatest pitchers of all time. I talked with Roger Clemens.
Joined by the great Roger Clemens, number 21 for the Boston Red Sox. What brings you back to Boston? I understand your son's playing the Cape League.
Yeah, my youngest one, Cody's going to play in the Cape. And then, but we're here for the Jimmy Fund. We got a little charity batting practice tomorrow early with, I think, a group of 10 or 15 businessmen. I'm not really sure who the crowd's going to be. But really cool thing last year, I think, in game. They kind of auctioned off batting practice at Fenway. We started this a couple of years ago, they have the big Jimmy Fund Telethon, and instead of people just calling in, we put a package together where I throw batting practice here at Fenway, and 10, 12 lucky people get to come take batting practice. I mean, I mean, I love it. So
how
competitive
do you get?
Oh, I throw them some really nice pies in there. I tease them that I'm a little wilder than I was in my younger days. You know, I don't have the control in it. I tease them that they said any requirements, and I said, yeah, defibrillator and a lot of ice.
That's pretty awesome. And I'm interested in your take on Chris Sale, what you've seen from him, obviously, yeah. In his time here in Boston and previous. Is he's putting up an historic season.
Yeah, I do a little work with Houston, obviously, so I watch a lot of our guys down there at home, and thank goodness for TiVo, because I can TiVo the games and watch the guys pitch. You know, over a two-hour game, I can bust it down to about 20 minutes and watch some of the really good things. And fortunately, I've been able to watch Sale pitch. And, you know, I just like his poise. I like his focus on the mound, a lot of determination, you know, a lot of passion. I just see that in his eyes when he pitches. His stuff is fantastic. Comes at you from a lot of different angles. And last time I saw him throw, when he was out there throwing, he actually took – it was like a slurve. He took a little bit off his tight slider, yeah. And started making it more of a slurve and bringing it back door to righties, which was pretty fun to see somebody be creative like that.
Outside of the changing arm angles, it seems like you're almost describing yourself or any, you know, great big game elite major league pitcher that we've seen over the course of time. Is there that commonality amongst guys like yourself and Pedro and Chris Sale, that determination that they have each performance, that focus, the ability to execute pitch after pitch?
Yeah, you hit it dead on. I mean, I enjoy watching guys that have a passion to do it year after year, not just a couple years, and they know to be great. You have to make small adjustments in your game sometimes because these hitters at this level are very good. I tell even my youngest that guys in the big leagues can put wood on a bullet. They're that good. And just to see the different types of pitchers that you have that have staying power, if you will, mm-hmm. And being able to do it, not just 1 or 2 years, but being able to do it 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, get 10 years in the league, being dominant, that's pretty special.
So for you, obviously, there was the first stint here with Boston, but the time after that where you have the most pride about the continuation of your career and the ability to change, even you always had a great fastball, but to change the focus and kind of evolve. How did you see yourself doing that per se in the Blue Jays years and the Yankees years with your second coming?
Well, I just had a great routine. When I came out of the University of Texas here in Boston, I had a fantastic routine. I was fortunate that really my mechanics were solid. No pitching coach really tinkered and messed with my mechanics. I had a great pitching coach here in Boston that I still visit with, Bill Fisher. And I think Fish and all the guys, even when I played in the Bob Hope tournament, somebody like Yogi Berra, I would have loved to have the opportunity to play when Yogi was playing, to throw to Yogi or Johnny Bench. Yogi gave me one of the best compliments you could ever give, saying that, you know, hey, kid, you could have pitched in our era. And so all that's meaningful. But, again, I was a power pitcher. I wasn't a power thrower. Right. And it's a big difference. You see a lot of throwers here that – and they can't get through the lineup second time, maybe third time. So it's real important to understand that even when you don't have your 95-mile-an-hour fastball, if you're 90, 91, it's good enough to get people out. And I had a good breaking ball. And, of course, second half of my career, I put my split into play. I had a devastating split finger. It made me a lot of money. And it was just a devastating pitch. I learned it a long time ago. I learned it in 1986 when I was a youngster here in Boston. I learned it from Mike Scott, who I mm-hmm. held a golf tournament with in Houston, but I knew how to throw it. I just didn't need it in my pitch repertoire, you know, to be able to put that into play till later in my career.
The split with the Yankees was really, you know, your key pitch.
I had it in Toronto too, yeah. And yeah, I mean, I had it. You know, like I said, you know, with the TV and the Sports Center and everything, they might show, 8, 10, 12 strikeouts, and you know, 8 of them or 9 of them were with the split finger. So guys see it on the other side on the highlights, it ingrains it in their mind. I probably used it. In a 120-pitch game, 115-pitch game, I might have featured it probably 20 times, maybe.
Finally, I mean, you are, without question, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, but have yet to been invited to Cooperstown. Do you see that happening in the future? Do you see that kind of getting to a point of which where there's going to be a recognition?
Yeah, I didn't play the game to worry about making it to Cooperstown. If it ever happens, you just have a lot of people that, you know, a lot of your teammates that would never have the chance to get there that you owe them a big thank you and a big hug to mm-hmm. because they're paving the way for you. It's kind of a, pump your chest, me, me, me type deal, and I've never been like that. So if that happens, I have no control. I've answered it a million times, but I have zero control over that. And, again, like I said, I didn't play the game that I love to play to make it there. I wanted to to be able to take my first couple of years, make some money, and take care of my family. And then after that, it was about winning championships.
Sounds like he may have given that answer at some point before. That is Roger Clemens joining us here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. When we return, we'll do some Hampshire Fisher Cats in the middle segment of the show. Two real exciting players with the Fisher Cats. So join us in the middle segment, Danny Jansen, who is their catcher, and also their center fielder, Jonathan Davis. We return here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Let's take a look at the New Hampshire Fisher Cats now here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show is brought to you by Revision Energy. What can sunshine do for you? The Life with Matt Bonner is powered by Revision Energy. So the New Hampshire Fisher Cats are going to host the Eastern All-Star Game this year, and one Fisher Cats who's going to be there is Danny Jansen, their catcher. And he has stepped up after being called up a couple months ago from Dunedin and has been flat-out fabulous, hitting number three for the Fisher Cats, batting over 300, and he has been a lot of fun to watch for the Fisher Cats. Here is Dan Jansen.
We get to know some of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. We're joined by Danny Jansen, new catcher with the Ball Clubs, come up from Dunedin. And talk a little bit about what it's been like so far, kind of getting adjusted to Double-A. You've certainly hit the ball well and have to adjust to that side of things, and also a brand-new pitching staff, though I'm certain you've worked with some of these guys before.
Yeah, the pitching staff part, pretty much every one of these guys I've had in the past. So it was much easier to come up here and having a relationship with a lot of these guys. And you know, they're working on some new stuff, so right away I got to know what that was and add that into what we need to do, and that made it really easy. And then on the hitting side, I'm just kind of riding a wave right now. We're kind of starting in Dunedin, just getting ready on time and just putting some good swinging at the right pitches, and so far just keep trying to ride that wave.
Yeah, and for catchers, there's always that balance between the hitting side of the game and, you know, the catching side of the game. And obviously the catching side is multifaceted, knowing your pitchers and obviously game planning and going on that side of things, and also the defensive side. How do you balance all those things, or do you focus more on the responsibilities of the catcher on the defensive side of the game?
Definitely more responsibility on the defensive side of the game. I think it's such an important role as a catcher. You know, you're a leader on the field, and my job is to get the pitching staff through nine innings, the starter through as many as he can, and battle with him every pitch of the way. So I'd say the best part about being a catcher, one of the best parts is you have such an important role on defense that it really doesn't matter with the stick. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a relief because it can go over four and have my guys just pitch well and the team wins, and I'm happy as can be. So that's, you know, it's definitely a balance, but you know, I definitely put more on the defense side because I think it's extremely important.
What's it meant to you to get plugged in the number three spot, you know, early on here? Obviously, you know, there's a lot of really good prospects on this Fisher Cats team. What has that meant to you?
It means a lot. I've always been like a 7-8 hitter. I mean, granted, I haven't really swung the stick, and I've been hurt for pretty much every year so far. So it's definitely an honor, and I'm grateful to be in the lineup at the three hole, hitting behind Richie and Jonathan Davis, and then have McBroom behind me. I'm comfortable right in that spot because I know those guys are going to get it done, and if they don't, I know I'm going to step up, and if I don't, I know McBroom will. So, and it goes on and on. So I love it.
Well, I guys will say, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, where you hit, but obviously, you know, being at the top of the lineup is where everybody wants to be. And does it change things in terms of the type of pitches that you see when you have those guys around you?
Yeah, I definitely say so. You know, being in the three spot, you're definitely going to get a dose of other pitches. And I think I've always been comfortable hitting with two strikes, so that definitely helps me out. I'm not really an aggressive hitter, and I'd like to change that and all that. So hitting off, you know, first pitch fastballs that I normally don't pull the string on. But you definitely get some other pitches. And I think just because I'm so comfortable with two strikes that I'm just comfortable with knowing that I'm going to get a bunch of other stuff.
Do you think that a catcher's mind, given, you know, how you think the game from the defensive side of things, is that an asset, or at times, you know, might catchers overthink things because of, you know, trying to determine what the pitcher's going to do and, you know, and not having that clear mind and focus that you have to have?
I think it's an asset. I know the other organizations, they might do stuff differently, but I know I kind of have a feel if a guy throws a high heater 0-2, it's kind of a setup pitch for if he has a curveball, it's probably going to come. So definitely not going to be sitting on it all the time. Definitely don't want to get, you know, blown away by a heater. So, but it definitely helps out because I kind of have an idea of maybe what's coming here, and it's in the back of my mind, so I can adjust accordingly.
One of the things that jumps out first about you when I watch you play is the glasses. Yeah. Tell me the story, you know, behind the glasses.
Well, last year, I know in spring training, I was looking at the scoreboard. It was a night game, looking at the scoreboard, and I was like, wow, that's not really that clear. And I guess I never really wanted to accept that my eyes were getting bad. I always thought I was kind of tired. And I played the whole year. Day games were fine, but when it got to nighttime, I was kind of squinting a little bit, and I kind of just let it blow over me. So after the season, I go to the doctor. I'm like, I'm going to get this figured out, and I have astigmatism. So I guess I should have probably gotten it looked at earlier, especially last year, but I'm grateful that I did it in time because it definitely makes a world difference. You know, everything's clear now, and it's so much easier.
Do you think that's made a difference in terms of your hitting as well?
Yeah, I would think so. I didn't have bad eyes in 2015, and and I didn't really swing the bat well then, so I'm not going to really say it's all that, but it definitely definitely helps now because, you know, everything's clear, and I think it's just my approach and just trying to be ready on time and be committed to what my hands are doing and not trying to change things and just riding a wave and just being even keel.
Danny, thanks a lot.
Absolutely, thank you.
Another really good guy on the Fisher Cats is their leadoff hitter and center fielder, Jonathan Davis.
So as we get to know some of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, we're talking right now the center fielder, leadoff hitter for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, Jonathan Davis. And so talk about your baseball journey, you know, to get to this point. And, you know, every player has kind of their own story. What does baseball, you know, mean to you? And what has the journey been like for you?
Well, you know, baseball is it's a big part of my life. It's a major part of my life, honestly, besides faith and family. Baseball is something that I've always had passion about. I tried to take pride in, you know, what I do on the field. As a young lad, I noticed you mentioned the camp this morning. You know, it was just fun, you know. And so growing up, I had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, along that journey, I realized that, like, I might be able to do this at a higher level. And so, you know, I put the effort, I put the time and things into that. And, you know, it got me to play college baseball at the University of Central Arkansas. There, I was able to develop my mindset and my body, you know, to be able to do the things that I wanted to do and maybe take my game to where I am now. And that happened for me under the direction of Coach Alan Gum. And, you know, I'm here with the Blue Jays. I'm thankful for the opportunity. And, you know, I've met a lot of good people along the way. And, you know, I'm just thankful to be where I am.
One of the things that really jumped out, and we're talking about the clinic that the Fisher Cats put on Saturday. I mean, it was amazing to see, you know, you and Connor Green and how much, you know, you enjoyed being around the kids and enjoyed the game and passing on the lessons of the game. And, you know, a lot of times the kids were just so excited to be around you guys. It must be pretty, you know, rewarding to have that opportunity to be out there and have command the respect of, you know, 7 to 10-year-olds.
Right. And, I mean, anytime you're able to make a young kid smile, you know, it does your heart good. I think a lot of times in this life, we have a lot of – we focus on ourselves a lot, you know. And I think that's a big part of, you know, just giving back what somebody did for you as a young kid. You know, being able to do that and give back to others because that's what it's ultimately about. And it brings you joy at the same time.
So does a player who's here, you know, think about, you know, the path towards the major leagues? That's obviously what everybody wants. And do you try to craft, you know, your game to play to your strengths but also play to what a major league team may need? Or do you just, you know, play the game? Because there's, you know, obviously guys in the past who are great base dealers or guys who are tremendous defensive players, can play multiple positions, great with runners in scoring positions, stolen bases. Do you try to find a specific path or do you be – you know, the best guy you could be all around?
Right. To answer that question, I think it's a little bit of both. Of course, we both know that that is my ultimate goal, to get there. But at the same time, my attention can't be on where I'm going. It has to be on where I am right now. And so for me, I think a big thing, Ronnie, our hitting coordinator, told me this is don't play to get to the big leagues, but this is your big leagues. Mm-hmm. So I try to make my game more fillable right now, and that way when I get to the big leagues, I'm already ready, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to try to just, you know, say I want to be a big leaguer. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be a big leaguer right now, and that'll ultimately, you know, get me to where I want to go. And so every day I come to the ballpark, I try to focus on getting better and, you know, just helping my team win. And ultimately that'll make me the player that I want to be.
It seems there's been a real difference in, you know, how organizations look at younger players as well. I mean, when I first started covering baseball a long time ago, you'd see – you know, just pretty much big guys, like guys who are 6 feet and taller, and those would be the power hitters in the team. And now, I mean, you look particularly, you know, at the Red Sox and their outfield, and everybody's your size, you know, 5 foot, 5 foot nine. And those guys can hit, and they can hit a great distance. Right. You've hit, you know, a pretty long home run on Tuesday night down the line here. Do you see that the path is more now? I mean, Jackie and Mookie refer to themselves as baseball playmakers. And do you see that being, you know, what teams are looking for now?
I don't necessarily think it's a matter of size, like you said. I think it's a matter of can you play the game?
Right.
And we all know also that this sport is a moneymaker. So any way you can get the job done, that's what they're looking for. I don't care if you're round, wide, and you're 5 foot two. If you can hit home runs, or if you can steal a base, or get somebody out on the mound, hey, they will pay you to do that. And so, I just think it's a matter of getting the job done, and that's what baseball is coming to. You know, can this guy do what I want him to do? Can he get this out, or can he make this play, or what role can he fill with this organization? And so organizations don't necessarily, I don't think, look for a certain type of player, but they look for, can this person get this job done? And that's ultimately what we're trying to do, get a job done.
Final thing, you know, talk about beginning your baseball journey. We talked kind of going back full circle. I mean, what was baseball like for you as a kid? When did you get started, and when did, you know, you mentioned that this faith and family and baseball are all intertwined as being the major things, you know, in your life. At what point did baseball become that? Has it always been that way?
Yes, it's always been that way for me, man. My grandpa and my great grandpas, we have pictures of them playing baseball, and you know, it's just been, I feel like it's in my blood, you know. But I think I remember my dad and my grandpa coached me when I was playing T-ball. And I used to be a little small guy hitting home runs then. But the thing that they told me is make somebody else better today, you know. So when I went out there, I wasn't just, you know, trying to put on a show, but I was trying to have fun and, you know, help my teammates win. And that's what they always told me. So, you know, it's just about, like I said, faith, of course, having a faith in, I believe in God, and, you know, just put my trust in him regardless of what happens. And then, of course, family. I'm a family-oriented person. I'm actually getting married in December.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, so I'm excited about that. And then, you know, just playing this game with passion, you know, and just giving somebody joy and hope out there. So that's what I do.
John, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it, man.
Right, that is Jonathan Davis, the New Hampshire Fishercats, up next. They've been one of the best stories in baseball this year. The Minnesota Twins were at Fenway Park last week. We talk with a couple of their stars. We return here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show powered by Revision Energy.
Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the program is presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Minnesota Twins came into Fenway Park in first place in the AL Central, now find themselves three games behind the Cleveland Indians, which is a little more like what people expected this year. But the Twins have made great progress. They lost over 100 games last year, and they're looking to do that thing that everybody loves, worst to first in baseball. One of the big reasons for their success is Miguel Sano, who is an all-star, DHs, plays third base, and has the second highest exit velocity in baseball, which means he hits the ball really, really hard.
Miguel Sano is one of the best players in baseball. It's fun to watch him here this series at Fenway Park. And you hit the ball harder than almost anybody in the game. What is the key to you in hitting the ball hard, and how do you see that as a benefit for you in getting on base more frequently?
I try to get patient with the play, and I try to make a good count all the time. That's the reason sometimes when I hit it hard, and I try only to make a good count, and I don't know that they do too much of the play.
Yeah, is that really the key for you, is kind of thinking the game? And I think back to David Ortiz and his time here, and he thought the game was able to get to a point where he knew what pitch was coming, and that was the key to him hitting the ball hard, was just kind of thinking the game and being, you know, and taking care of the mental side of things.
I saw when he played, I saw in TV, I remember, and I got a chance to play against him in the big league, and he said with that team here, it was, it's good when you see like big guy like that, and the people got respect to him, and it's really good.
How about for you hitting it at Fenway Park? Is it something that you like? Do you see the wall there? A lot of guys will say, and you know, your manager, Paul Molitor, mentioned the fact that you know he had to kind of just tune the wall out and pretend that it wasn't there at times because it is pretty enticing with how close it is.
You know, I don't try to pull the ball here. I try only to hit the ball up the middle right field. So the pitcher come inside and yeah, this different because I need to hit the ball that way because he threw me inside. But in the game, only I try to take the middle right field.
You've been one of the guys who, you know, is a great example for young players to watch because there's been kind of that progressive nature of what you've done where you've gotten better from 1 year to the next. What have been the keys for you in getting better on a year-in, year-out basis, both in the field and also having your best year offensively?
You know, everything come up the war. If you work hard, you get better every day, and this is what I'm doing. I'm working really hard and try to do my job every day in the field.
And the results have come from that. You're going to be in the Home Run Derby, the All-Star game. How exciting is that for you to do that for the first time?
You know, really excited for me because I can be in the All-Star and the Home Run Derby my first time. And I'm so really excited because the guy gave me the opportunity to shine and they can be there.
Brian Dozier hits leadoff and plays second base for the Twins. He had 42 home runs last year, which is the most since Harmon Killebrew played for the Twins back in the 60s.
Minnesota Twins have been one of the best stories in baseball this year as we're joined by Brian Dozier and talk about this team and what's led to the success that you guys have had this year in your view.
Well, it's a bunch of different things. I think the main thing has been how well we've played defense. And I'm not just talking about making plays. There's a lot that goes into being a good defensive team. When to throw to right bases, how to keep double plays in order, doing the little things right to eliminate big innings and stuff. That's the things that escalated really quickly every game last year. And we cleaned that up, and it's been really, really exceptionally good. And on top of that, our outfield runs down balls better than anybody in the league. And our pitching staff's done a great job as well, but I think it's credit to a lot of our defense.
Yeah, I was talking to Craig Breslow about the 2013 Red Sox, and that was one of the big reasons they were successful was that just the attention to detail, the love of the game, and focusing on each at-bat, each play,
right,
and making the right baseball play. It seems like a simple thing, but
right,
obviously that's not always the case with teams, and something that I think, you know, obviously the really good teams, with the Giants teams, and they won in the odd years, obviously, in 10, 12, and 14.
Right.
Same thing. And that is that an important part of the game that kind of gets overlooked?
No, absolutely. The big thing up here at this level is everyone's kind of, the talent level is all kind of the same,
right,
in the grand scheme of things. And if you go out and play on talent alone, individually or as a team, that's not very good. Sometimes you get away with it, but in the long haul of a long season, it catches up with you. To make yourself and your team kind of get over the hump and be that one that stands out and, you know, makes the playoffs and that kind of thing, you have to do the little things right. And of course you're going to hit homers, you're going to score a lot of runs, you're going to hold people to runs, play, make the web gems, all that kind of, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about doing the little things right, and preparation for intangibles in the game was a huge thing that we talked about and still talk about to this day, but talked about in spring training that we got to clean up.
Yeah, and obviously those are the things you control too. You can't control if you're hitting as many home runs as you did last year. You can't control if your batting average is down, you know, 30 points. Sometimes, you know, the ball goes at guys, and law of averages says you have a better second half or whatever the case may be. But that seems to be, you know, one of the things that, again, that 13 team and Paul Molitor, looking back at his career, you know, the focus and the attention to detail, each at bat, the preparation, and how important is that for, you know, the young base of this team, and how do you think that has helped them in terms of, you know, the acceleration of some of the young prospects that you guys have into, you know, all-star caliber players?
Well, it's basically getting in their minds the fact that have a reason behind everything that you do. Don't just steal a base to steal a base. Prepare for the fact and watch the video of the fact to see it, know the exact time of every single pitcher. So when that time comes, know if you can or can't get him, or if it's a high probability that you can. And little things like that throughout the game, why we shift, why we want to throw into second base with a two-run lead on first and third, like little things like that that add up. And that's what makes you good teams. And the fact that we have guys doing that, and I'm not just talking about watching film and stuff, but actually having nothing whatsoever be of a surprise to them when they step on the field, the cut of the grass, the way bunts are rolling down third, everything. And when you put all that together, you're a lot smarter player.
That is Brian Dozier, second baseman for the Minnesota Twins. This has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Matt will rejoin us for the show next week. We're doing something fun here in the state of New Hampshire, both Matt and I in-state over the summer. Clue you into more details about that as we get deeper into the summer months. This has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show presented by the Prescription Center.